supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, many of you are suffering with multicolored Asian ladybugs coming into your home for the winter. What if you could put those ladybugs to work eating truly bad bugs? We will investigate that question when we get to the question of the week. Until then, it's your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Yolanda, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Yolanda. Where are you?
I'm in a little town called Stump Creek in western PA.
Okay, Stump Creek, huh?
Yep, that's between Punxsutawney and Du Bois.
Oh, okay. Well, everybody knows Punxsutawney. That's where that rascal groundhog is who predicts winter all the time. What can we do for Yolanda near the home of Pennsylvania's most famous groundhog?
I have this apple tree who I found out is yielding really good apples. However, the apples have this kind of black-looking mold on them.
Yep.
And I want to know, how can I bring this root back to life? The tree has a couple of dry branches with fruits that was yielding. They just died with the fruit in it, so it's all black.
Right.
But it still, it looks strong. It looks like there still has some life left in it. And I just want to know, what do I need to do?
So is this a tree you inherited when you moved there?
Yes. It looks like it's quite old. It looks like it's been there for quite a while.
Apple trees are very long-lived. They get very big. So the basic answer is, once we get into dormancy, once all the deciduous trees have like lost their leaves and we've had a couple of hard frosts, can you get somebody to come in and at least cut off the dead branches?
Okay.
Because what you want to do is kind of what's called a rejuvenation pruning.
Okay.
Typically, to get real high quality fruit, you want to be pruning apple trees every year and thinning the fruits and all that. But the truth is, I know a lot of apple trees like yours that are many decades old that are capable of producing good size, very decent looking fruits without a huge amount of care. You can't get close to the top of this tree, can you?
Maybe someone that will be good at pruning trees might be able to with the right equipment. It's a little taller than what you see at an apple orchard. So it's not really tall, but, you know.
So we can get up there with a steady ladder and somebody to hold it.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
So here's what I want you to do. Right now, you might want to start marking the really bad-looking branches. Because sometimes when you get into winter, it's hard to tell because everything looks so bad.
Mm-hmm.
But
right.
Get a can of spray paint and make a red X on the bad branches or tie ribbons on them or something. And then in the dead of winter, get somebody to come out who knows what they're doing, remove all those bad branches, and then remove any branches that are pointing straight up that make the tree too tall. And,
okay.
And maybe remove a couple of branches from really crowded areas.
Okay.
Then in the spring, obviously, the tree is going to flower. If you notice that there are branches that you missed, so to speak, that don't flower in the spring,
okay,
it would be really good to get them out of there. And then a lot of these branches you can reach, right?
Yes.
On the branches that you can reach, once the little apples start to set, just start pulling off little apples. The rule for a tree your age, so to speak, is in between each apple that you leave behind, there should be room for another apple.
I see.
So I want you to take off like at least half the fruits. The more fruits you take off early in the season, the bigger the ones will get that remain on the tree and the more disease-free they will be.
Ooh.
So now, believe it or not, just by pruning out the dead branches and opening up the tree to better airflow and then removing as many apples as is easy for you to do to thin out the tree, you are going to get more apples and you're going to know what to do with.
Okay, so then when it comes to that black-looking mold that grows on the fruit, I don't have to do anything to treat that?
The more branches you remove and the more apples you remove, the more airflow will go into the tree, the less that disease will show up.
Okay.
And make sure you rake away all the dead apples at the end of the year. Don't leave the old apples underneath the tree.
What would that cost if I don't do that?
That'll re-inoculate the tree with the disease in the spring.
Okay.
All right. But I think you're going to do great.
That sounds simple enough. Thank you so very much for your help.
All right. My pleasure, Yolanda. Take care.
Thank you. You too. Bye.
1-888-346-9499. Larry, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Howdy.
Hello, Larry. How you doing, man?
All right. I'm doing well.
And where is Larry doing well?
I'm calling from Muncie, Indiana.
Very good. What can we do for you, sir?
Well, I had a question about my grapevine. We moved into our first home here, and it had a grapevine, but they had allowed a mulberry bush to grow up through it, and it was about 20 feet tall, so we spent a day clearing out all the mulberry and pulling the grapes out. So now I've got this extremely long grapevine, and I was wondering how to prune it. I've looked at a few books, and it looks like all the books talk about pruning plants that have already been pruned before or that are just starting out, and this is a big Goliath, and I'm unsure how to proceed.
Well, your situation is not unique at all, man. A lot of times people move into these properties and there's an old neglected grapevine or a couple of ancient apple trees that haven't been cared for in years. So obviously this thing did produce clusters of grapes this summer, right?
Yes, sir.
And when you cleaned up all the debris and the giant trees growing through it, did you try any of the grapes?
Yes, I think they're Concords. We got about 7 pints of jelly from it.
Okay, so see, you're a success already, Larry.
Yeah.
A lot of the advice you're reading for pruning grapevines is for wine grapes, too, which are much more finicky. You know, your grapes are cold hardy. How big is the main trunk where it comes out of the ground? How much of a monster is this?
It's not super girthy. I'd say it's probably 3/4 to maybe 1 inch in diameter.
Oh, okay. I thought you were talking about some ancient vine or something like
no,
that.
No, it's just like really tall and spindly from where it had to grow up to the top of the tree to get light.
Right. Yeah, God's trellis, right? So I'm presuming the previous owners had not trellised this vine at all?
There's an arbor, but it's just 4 posts with 1 2x4 going across it. And I was going to build another arbor for it, and I thought about doing like the pergola style.
Well, you know, there is a lot to be said for that. These Concord grapes, they're very vigorous vines. They will grow up onto an arbor like you describe, and that actually solves a lot of problems because if you create this kind of allee where the grapes vines grow across the top and the clusters hang down, they get a lot more airflow. There's very little pruning that needs to be done. And midsummer, it's like natural air conditioning to walk through this walkway that's covered with these grapevines. So I would support that idea 100% if you have the room. You know, you'll simply train the vines to go up on the structure and across it. And what you'll probably want to do more so than really vigorous winter pruning, you'll always want to prune out any damaged or diseased areas like that. But if this vine turns out to be super vigorous, what you're going to want to do is throughout the growing season, remove grape leaves and maybe even remove some of the clusters of grapes to make sure it doesn't get crowded so that the airflow and the sunlight can get to everything. And that's the best way to prevent disease. Go, first of all, to your local extension office. Actually, go to the state office online, the Indiana State Extension. Get their bulletins, which you'll be able to read online, on grapevine pruning and trellising. And if you want to go for the gold, I always recommend Lee Reich's books, R-E-I-C-H. He has great books. One of the titles is Grow Fruit Naturally. Another one is The Pruning Book. But it doesn't matter. Lee is a fool for grapes, and he goes into great detail about proper pruning and all your different options on trellising. But I'll tell you right away, I like your plan already. I've been through these grape arbors, and they're just fabulous places in the summer.
All right. Well, I appreciate it, sir.
All right. Good luck. Enjoy your grape arbor. They're great refuges in the summer.
All right. Thank you. Love your show.
Thank you. Take care, man.
Bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and remind our listeners in places with deciduous trees that jobs number 1 through 33 this time of year are collecting and shredding all those leaves for mulching and compost making. But don't go running outside with your blower vac just yet, because we'll be right back with a plan to put home-invading ladybugs to work for you and take more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by the Espoma Company, makers of Biotone Starter Plus for new transplants, full of beneficial microbes and mycorrhiza for deeper roots and stronger plants. Espoma, a natural in the garden since 1929. And by HarvestRite. HarvestRite's home freeze dryer allows you to preserve your own freeze-dried food that can last 25 years. Meat, fruit, vegetables, and ice cream can be freeze-dried at home. More at HarvestRite.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, we will see if there is a way to put the ladybugs that are trying to find their way into people's homes all over the country this time of year to work eating pests on your houseplants. Can it be done? We'll find out after lots more of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Beth, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you. Hi there.
Hello, Beth. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I am just ducky, thank you. And where is Beth great?
I am great at Friends School Mullica Hill in Mullica Hill, New Jersey.
Oh, very good. Are you a teacher?
I'm not, actually. I'm the head of the school, but I do have with me one of our teachers, Jason, and I have two of our students, Brooke and Maddie.
Okay. I didn't realize there was going to be a test today. There's no blue books involved or anything, is there?
Yes, get ready for their questions.
Oh, good Lord. All right. Well, what can I do for the good folks at Friends School Mullica Hill?
Well, this year we have undertaken creating a very small school garden. We're just getting going, but we've declared it the Year of the Garden at Friends School Mullica Hill, and we are all reading a book about gardening called The Good Garden by Katie Smith Melway. We really think that gardening is a great way for students to learn, and we did plant some crops already that have started to come up in the fall. I'm going to turn it over to our teacher, Jason, who can explain a little bit more about that.
Hi, Mike. How you doing?
Good, Jace. What's up?
We started a couple small raised garden beds.
Good.
So we're concerned about, you know, the plants having the proper space to grow. And we're just wondering what we should take into consideration as we plant the vegetables.
One of the issues with school gardens in the Northeast and the Mid-Atlantic states is this school year is, you know, kind of technically the reverse of what we consider the main gardening season. But the truth is there is an awful lot that you can grow in the fall and the spring, as long as you do little things to protect them and you choose the right kind of crops. So I feel like this is the old Tonight Show with Johnny Carson. How small are your beds, Jason?
They're about 4 foot by 5 foot.
Oh, well, that's absolutely fine. Because once you've got a raised bed, you don't want people stepping in it if you can avoid it. Don't be afraid to break it down into beds that are 3 feet wide. That's what I recommend for gardens that have little people hanging around them. And so what are you planning to grow, or what have you planted?
So right now we have a small crop of spinach.
Good.
We have a small crop of green lettuce, and we have a small crop of mesclun salad.
Yeah, those are all perfect salad greens. Are great crops. As long as you get the seed to germinate while the soil is still warm, they actually prefer to grow in the cool temperatures of October, November, even into December. Have you thought about getting any kind of row covers or little hoops to put over top of the raised beds to continue the crops into the winter?
No, we did not.
You can buy what are called floating row covers. The big brand name is Remay. What they are is spun fabric. And you've seen pictures of these in, like, the California lettuce fields. They grow all of the lettuce out there under cover to keep insects off of it.
Okay.
But because these are cool weather crops, all they need is a little protection to keep growing. And these fabric row covers allow light and air and rain to get through, but they keep the temperature a little warmer at the soil, and they keep the crops growing longer.
Okay.
And then that's the most efficient way to grow crops over the winter. Did you plant spring bulbs or garlic?
So we haven't yet. We actually have a student who has a question about that.
Okay.
Hello, my name is Maddie. And I'm in seventh grade here at the Friends School in Mullica Hill. And my question is, what vegetables can we plant in the spring so that we can begin to harvest them before school ends?
Well, it's going to be the same things, Maddie. In the spring, because the soil is so cold, it really benefits you to start lettuce and spinach, arugula, all those other salad greens indoors. But just start them enough to get the plants germinated, because once that you can see that they are plants, they love the cold weather and they will grow great in the spring. And as the spring progresses and you get into like May, you'll be harvesting very large amounts of lettuce and spinach. But two things you could do now, you could go to a local farmer's market, and if they have any garlic left, you could buy some heads of garlic, break it down into the individual cloves, plant those garlic cloves in your raised beds, and with the aid of row covers to keep them a little bit warmer, you would probably have full-size heads of garlic to harvest just as the school year is ending in June. And you can also go to a garden center and buy pansies. Pansies are edible flowers that you could put on top of the salad greens. You know, make a nice mixed salad of the lettuce, the mescaline greens, the spinach, and then some pansy flowers on top, and you would have a beautiful salad. And the plants of pansies that you put in the ground now, they will bloom for you and be pickable and edible all winter long. And then the same thing, they will take off in the spring and they'll start pumping out more flowers than you can use.
Pansies sound like a great and interesting. Thank you.
So it's a question of finding the vegetables that you really like the flavor of and then learning the right seasons and the little tricks to grow them. All right, good luck, Friends School, Mullica Hill.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. 1-888-346-9499. Ed, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hello.
Hello, Ed. How are you?
I'm doing just fine, thank you.
And where is Ed doing fine?
Lionville, Pennsylvania.
Lionville. So where is that?
Near Exton.
Exton is not far from Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Okay. What can we do for Ed in the part of Pennsylvania where lions still roam?
I have some pine trees, some Colorado blue spruces that I planted many years ago. They were live Christmas trees, and
right.
I stuck them in the ground. I have a little grove of three of them.
Mm-hmm.
And for many years, they grew beautifully. They were looking great. And then a couple of years ago, the branches started dying at the bottom, and they're all scraggly and... there's a lot of lichen growing on the tree. And I don't know, they're just not all those beautiful, healthy trees that they used to be years ago.
Well, Ed, you have this. Your timing is exceptional because this is something people are going to be thinking about as we approach the Christmas holidays. And it's something I did successfully, oddly enough, because I made a lot of mistakes and I really didn't know anything about tree planting when I did it. But I tell you, what a revelation it was when you figured out how heavy that root ball was, wasn't it, Ed?
Oh, yes.
Now, when you planted them, did you remove the wrappings and everything?
Of course.
Okay, good. Well, not of course, Ed. That puts you at the, at the top of the class. So you say they're browning out on the bottom, which is so common for a tree that does not get full sun on all sides.
They get pretty much full sun.
On all sides.
Well, and for 15 years, they were beautiful trees.
Right. Now, did you do anything different? Did you mulch them? Did you feed them?
Nope.
But the top of the trees, I'm going to predict, look perfect.
Not really. Not as bad as the bottom. The bottom, I can almost walk. I can pretty much walk under them now, whereas they used to hug the ground.
Right, but over the years, as the bottom branches browned out, you would prune them off.
Yes. Well, the bottom branches browning out happened kind of rapidly over a period of a few years.
Are they planted in an area with good drainage?
Reasonably good drainage.
Yeah. You know, there are a couple of trees that can survive wet feet, but not a lot of them, and it's a very specific number. Everybody knows the willow and the river birch. Yeah.
Now, I have a Norway spruce that's planted about 25 feet away,
mm-hmm.
and it's perfect.
Okay. Well, and we've had really cold winters, you know, because the Colorado part is true about these trees. They really are mm-hmm. native to Colorado. So did you ever notice bagworms on them, which would have looked like pine cones?
No. I've had bagworms other places, but never on these trees.
Okay. And no difference in lawn treatment? Somebody didn't move next door and start spraying, watered it?
No, I have my yard's a couple acres.
Okay. Well, the only thing I can think of is that the soil has become dense and saturated. But if you didn't make any mistakes, the only thing I can suggest is when you put the next one in the ground to continue this cycle, to plant it even higher. Make sure the root flare shows completely above ground.
Okay.
And maybe try a different area, a higher area in your yard to make sure that the drainage is good. But nothing you're saying leads me to believe you did anything wrong. You know, sometimes it just happens, you know. The one thing I can say is it sounds like you're doing everything right. You know, you just got a bad hand. So take them down one at a time, replant in a different area, make sure they get sun from all sides, and maybe increase even the distance between them.
Okay.
Sorry, Ed.
We tried.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I still listen to your show.
All right. Thank you, Ed.
Thank you. Bye.
1-888-346-9499. Roger, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hey, Mike, how you doing today?
I am just ducky today. Raj, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good, except for a vole problem.
Well, that can ruin your day. Where are Roger's voles hanging out?
I'm in Bucks County, PA, near the Buckingham area.
Oh, that's a gorgeous area out there by New Hope and everything.
Yeah, not too far away from there. I've got a lawn that's about an acre, lots of Pachysandra and some Vinca.
Oh, they love that.
And it's wooded around the edges of the property.
Yeah, no, they love that ground cover to hide under.
Yeah, you know, years ago, I had some voles around. I had someone trying to, a lawn service that said they were going to control them. Mm-hmm. Not a lawn service, but a pest control.
Right.
And they put some traps out, and they would capture some voles, but they still continued to stay. I had a lawn service that came around and said, well, we have milky spores we can put on. And they put those down. They said they kind of come for the grubs and they eat those, and while they're there, they'll eat your other plants and things too.
Okay, now wait a minute.
That's really from moles, though, isn't it? I found
correct.
Out since then.
Correct.
Okay,
moles,
so it really doesn't help the voles.
M-O-L-E-S,
yes.
Make raised tunnels in lawns.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But they are teenage boys. They're total carnivores. They mm-hmm. only eat essentially three things, earthworms, beetle grubs, and cicada larva underground.
Okay.
Voles, V-O-L-E-S, are little kind of rat-like creatures with very thick black fur. And they run around. They may make lanes in lawns.
They do. That's what I have, yeah.
Just using the same path over and over again, like humans will wear a path into the woods.
Mm-hmm.
And they only eat plant material. They specialize in the roots of things like hostas and spring bulbs and stuff like that. Milky spore wouldn't affect a vole at all. One of the first things I suggest when people have vole problems mm-hmm. is a professionally made castor oil preparation.
Okay.
You know, there used to be these old wives' tales and stuff about planting the castor bean plant.
Okay.
And moles would not come near the farm. Castor beans are very poisonous, so you have to be careful. You can't have these tropical plants anywhere near there's children or dogs, or especially men, because all three will put anything into their mouth. But they can refine the castor bean into a liquid preparation or a solid preparation that is not poisonous anymore. They take out the ricin. That is actually the poison. But you can take that out, and then you still have the stink. You still have the terrible smell of the castor bean.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's in these concentrated powders and liquids. So right now, they're kind of hibernating for the winter. I don't know if you want to go to any trouble. But at the very beginning of the season, as soon as it warms up, then you really want to saturate these areas with your choice of castor oil preparation.
I could saturate the Pachysandra, you're saying?
Sure. Yeah, it won't hurt the Pachysandra. It won't hurt anything. It won't even hurt the voles. But it will impart a stink to the soil that they won't stand. And they will move away, hopefully, to your neighbor's house.
Okay.
The other thing you can do is bait lots of mouse traps with peanut butter and put those under, like, shoe boxes with little holes cut into them so birds don't accidentally get trapped. There are also now electronic mouse traps that run on 4 AA batteries that electrocute creatures that go inside. They would work just as well for voles as they would for mice, and you can leave these outside, knock their numbers down, and repel the rest. You don't want to use poisons for two reasons. First, there's no reason to believe a plant-eating creature is going to take the poison. So it might just wind up poisoning a neighbor's cat or something else. But if a vole does take it, and then that vole is captured by a raptor, an owl, or a hawk, you're taking out a creature that would kill thousands of voles over its lifetime.
And that makes sense.
And especially with mice. God forbid you poison mice in your house, because they die in the walls. Then you live with your mistake forever.
Okay.
So traps outside, make sure that birds can't get at them. Castor oil preparations go by the highest amount of active ingredient you can find in these products. And if you want to go for the gold, actually put up raptor perches, because you're out in an area with lots of hawks and owls. So if you put up these cross beams in your garden, the raptors will roost on them. This is their favorite food. I got rid of voles at our church's graveyard just by erecting raptor perches.
Really?
All right, Raj?
Good to know. Thank you very much. I appreciate your help.
Good luck.
Okay, thanks. Bye-bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that I will once again have the honor of hosting the Philadelphia Interfaith Hospitality Network's annual Empty Bowl Dinner to benefit families fighting homelessness on Wednesday, November 18th at the Lutheran Theological Seminary on Germantown Avenue in Chestnut Hill. But don't go looking for all the details at the events section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back with a plan to put home-invading ladybugs to work for you and take more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by the Espoma Company, makers of Biotone Starter Plus for new transplants, full of beneficial microbes and mycorrhiza for deeper roots and stronger plants. Espoma, a natural in the garden since 1929. And by Harvest Right. Harvest Right's home freeze dryer allows you to preserve your own freeze-dried food that can last 25 years. Meat, fruit, vegetables, and ice cream can be freeze-dried at home. More at harvestright.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, we'll get to the question of the week. Can the Halloween ladybugs, the Asian invasive ladybugs known to colonize homes at this time of year, be put to work cleaning pests off of houseplants? We'll tell you after a couple more of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Paul, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hey, Mike, how are you?
I am just ducky today, Paul. How are you doing?
I'm doing fabulous.
And
I'm doing fabulous in West Grove, Pennsylvania, the thriving metropolis of.
Okay, West Grove is just outside of Philly?
It's in Chester County, just outside of the Kennett Square area, right on the Delaware Maryland borders.
All right, what can we do for you, Paul?
Well, we finally successfully grew three green globe artichoke plants. One of them is planted in a half whiskey barrel, and the other ones are planted in our raised beds. And we do use the mushroom compost each year. We've been doing it here for about 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
And we seem to finally get it right. I started them planted in a from seed in a small hydroponic system. Did that for about a month and a half and finally transplanted them when they were about 5 or 6 inches into the soil. One of the plants, the one in the whiskey barrel, seems to have progressed the most. It's about 2.5 feet tall. We did get one artichoke off it, and there are a couple of others that are continuing to grow. The other plants are still in that phase where they'd love to do something, but it's getting a little late in the year. And since they're perennials, we would love to be able to hold on to them through the winter, but I'm a little concerned about whether they can survive even wrapped in burlap and covered in straw or anything else. So I'm calling to see whether you have any thoughts on that.
Well, my first thought is pepper plants are perennials too, but only if you drag them inside by the end of October. And these were first-year plants?
Correct.
Yeah. So first of all, amazing congratulations. You achieved a world of success by getting edible artichoke off of anything. There is a good reason that virtually all of the artichokes grown for consumption in the United States are grown in one part of California. Because they are plants that require, you know, not only to be protected from freezing cold and waterlogged soils in winter, but there's some crazy vernalization they need and something like that. So you're in a good position, however. I can tell you right now that they will need to come inside, but inside in quotation marks, not indoors as house plants like my pepper plants or anything like that, and not quite dug up, so to speak, and stored like summer blooming bulbs like canna lilies or calla lilies, although a little closer to that. Now, you have an amazing resource nearby. Longwood Gardens has experts who will not only know how to do this, but they will have the type of greenhouse that will carry these plants through the winter, and then you would take them back outside again and plant them in your garden in the summer. And then, you know, that second year, you would get a really good crop of artichokes. But if you want to go to the source, Mount Vernon is the epicenter of artichoke production and knowledge outside of California. Now, obviously, the climate at Mount Vernon is a little warmer than us. The winters are a little bit milder, but Jefferson and Washington both perfected the art of growing artichokes and perennializing them in our climate. And it is a favorite topic, and they still have horticulturalists, those are horticultural showplaces of Virginia. And if you can't go to the Mount Vernon website, I think you'll have information there on how to do it. And I would urge you to do it right away. The one in the whiskey barrel may have a longer time frame, but I think you're going to want to get those ones out of the raised beds and pot them up in the proper containers and keep them stored at the right temperature and the right conditions over winter.
So the concept of building a cage around it and doing a plastic or plexiglass style greenhouse would not be appropriate?
I would not do that, no, because what happens with glass or plastic is it heats up on a really bright week in the wintertime, and brings the plants out of dormancy. They start growing again. And then, of course, that can't protect them when the temperature drops down to 10 degrees.
Right.
You know, so, no, my understanding is they need to be potted up. The pots need to be kind of buried in loose soil in a place that stays around 40 or something like that. But not in a fridge with fruit or anything like that. So, but again, my knowledge of artichoke growing is that you don't want to leave them outside. You don't want to try to wrap them. And you want to turn to Mount Vernon for advice and do exactly what they say, because they take great pride in their artichoke production.
Got it. Well, that's some really good input, Mike. I do appreciate it. And I've got to tell you, your show is a constant on Saturdays, and we really, really enjoy it a lot.
Oh, thank you so much, Paul. All right, good luck with your amazing project. You already have a 95.
Thank you very much.
All right, man. 1-888-346-9499. Warren, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you for taking my call, Mike. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for making it, Warren. Otherwise, I'd be sitting here all sad and lonely for an hour. Where are you, man?
I'm in Gwinnett Valley, which is near Bluebell.
Right, the place just outside of Philadelphia that I can never spell.
Correct.
Yeah, Gwinnett Valley.
Everybody's trouble with it.
Yeah, Gwinnett Valley, Schuylkill, Wissahickon, you know. No wonder I got such bad grades in school. What can we do for Warren in the beautiful Gwinnett Valley?
Well, Mike, I was listening to your show last week when a woman was describing a potential dead pine tree, and I was listening to you, with your talk about the mulch around the trunk, which I totally agree. And then I was wondering towards the end of the call, well, what if it wasn't a pine at all? Maybe it was something deciduous, such as a larch or a dawn redwood, which would possibly fool somebody that's not familiar with what looks like an evergreen, but it's really not.
That is, and was this, I don't remember the call off the top of my head. I'm starting to lose track of all these things after 17 years. This was somebody who had moved into a new place?
New place, yep.
Yeah, that's an excellent, excellent point. It's something that I don't keep in my frontal lobe, and I should, because you would know you had one of these trees. If you had lived in a place for 20 years, or you would hope that you would know you had one of these trees if you had planted it yourself. But most people are not aware that some, I guess you can't call them evergreens, you have to call them conifers.
Conifers, correct.
Or something else, that there are these trees that, you know, that drop their needles every year, or just the needles turn just incredibly brown, and the tree looks dead, but that's the way it's supposed to be.
Correct. And also, if the tree was under stress from, say, lack of water, it may drop its leaves or needles early, or appear to turn brown when it's only under stress and just trying to figure its way out of a bad situation.
These trees will surprise you. But again, especially with the dawn redwood, there's a lot of people who want to grow the, quote, living fossil. And
absolutely.
And when it's red, it's a beautiful tree. Well, I thank you for reminding me that there are, quote, evergreens that are supposed to look like this at this time of year. And I'll try to keep that back in my brain, Warren.
That's excellent, Mike. And I'm also with you that I think people should take their time before deciding to cut and clear, because it seems to be an epidemic right now that as soon as people move into a new property, the first thing they want to do is cut and clear and decide what they want later. And thinking of yourself instead of the community at large is something that people should take into mind before they do such a thing, because it affects everybody.
And not only that, you're ignoring stuff in the house that's really important that needs to get taken care of first.
True, true.
All right,
thank
Warren,
you so much,
thank
Mike.
You. Thank you. I will keep the larch and the dawn redwood in mind from now on.
Thank you very much, Mike.
Oh, thank you, man.
It.
Take care.
Okay. You too.
All right, as promised, it's time for the question of the week. Can invasive Asian ladybugs control indoor plant pests? Alexis Landis, producer of You Bet Your Garden, get us started by reading this week's oh-so-intriguing question, please.
Sure, Mike. Karina in Laval, which she explains is just northwest of Montreal, writes, I don't yet have a garden, maybe next year if my two-year-old will allow it. I do have about 30 houseplants plus herbs and some experiments that are going fairly well, like avocado and mango pits that I've grown into small trees. I grow it all indoors in the winter and put some plants out for the summer. This year, they got a huge infestation of aphids. I read an article that says ladybugs eat aphids, and shortly afterwards found a lot of ladybugs swarming on my deck windows. Thinking I had an easy solution to the aphid problem, I took some inside and put them on my plants. Then it hit me that I should probably have checked first to see if ladybugs are dangerous to humans, homes, and so on. So, how much trouble am I in? Will I be able to get rid of them after they munch the aphids? Do they bite? Why are so many of them on my deck in the first place? Mike, didn't you once explain that these ladybugs do kind of bite?
You are correct, oh wise one. She almost certainly has what we commonly call multicolored Asian ladybugs crawling all over her home. And research we did a couple of years back revealed that they do bite.
Yeah, but it's just a little bite, not a sting, right? Is it dangerous?
No, but they can make you uncomfortable three different ways. Their legs come to kind of a point, and people report a prickling sensation when a ladybug walks across their bare skin. Second, they actually do seem to deliver a small bite that's mildly painful, but really non-toxic and just an annoyance, really. But if you touch or startle them, they can also exude an irritating fluid out of their rear end. That liquid can cause a mild allergic reaction. It stinks and it stains surfaces.
And these ladybugs are known to invade homes by the thousands in the fall. So to me, they're just pests.
Well, they are kind of pestiferous, but her original instincts are still correct. Ladybugs in general are voracious predators of aphids and other soft-bodied pests. And this Asian species, also known as the Halloween ladybug, because of the time of year they tend to break into people's homes, may be the most voracious predator of the entire family. That's why they were originally collected in Asia and released in the United States to try and naturally control aphids in agricultural settings.
So they were deliberately released in the U.S.? Did Canada release them too?
Not as far as I can tell. And the first releases that were done in the U.S. 100 years ago were considered failures. But then they started showing up in the 1980s, and Michigan began reporting large numbers in the 1990s. The smart money says that some of those Michiganians just kept flying north.
So, are they good or bad?
It's a really mixed bag. They are great at controlling aphids, but many entomologists feel that they're displacing native ladybugs, much the way introduced praying mantises have replaced a lot of our Native American species. And unlike our native ladybugs, this Asian species swarms on the south-facing sides of homes in the fall, looking for ways to get inside for the winter, just like stink bugs and the other home-invading insects.
And I'm sure they just want to hibernate, so they're not going to eat her aphids.
That's not necessarily the case. These ladybugs, which, like the entire genus, aren't true bugs, they're in the beetle family, don't hibernate very deeply, and they tend to wake up on warm, sunny winter days, which contributes to both their potential annoyance and usefulness.
Okay, so you think she can put them to work?
Well, yeah, she certainly got the aphids, so I'd suggest spritzing the infested plants with lots of water so that there's droplets on all the leaves, very carefully spreading some of the ladybugs on the wet plants, and then covering individual plants or groupings with floating row cover, those spun fabric blankets that are used to protect plants from insects and light frosts outdoors.
Otherwise, they'd just fly all over the house.
Right. But if you contain them in a warm room with a water source and lots of prey, they should do what comes naturally. If you get the conditions right, they might even mate. And their weird little larval forms are even more voracious predators of aphids than the adults.
All right. Any other tips?
Well, they're strongly attracted to light, so they're always going to migrate towards the windows or artificial lights that are keeping these indoor plants alive. So you want to make sure that the screening you're using is in good shape in those areas to keep them confined. And I would miss those plants daily. Ladybugs are going to be healthier and more active if the plant leaves are wet down regularly.
What if some escape from their plants?
Oh, just get one of those long-handled bug vac things and capture any strays promptly. Then you can sleep tight and not let the ladybugs bite. Well, that sure was some interesting information about getting Asian ladybugs to possibly pay rent to live in your home now, wasn't it? Luckily for you, the question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website. To read it over in detail with links to other ladybug articles, just click the link for the question of the week at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Gardens Alive supports the You Bet Your Garden question of the week. Yikes, my producer is threatening to sprinkle aphids on my houseplants if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499 or send us your email, you're tired, you're poor, your wretched refuse teeming towards our garden shore. At garden@whyy.org. Please include your location, or we'll just write you back and ask you for it and then forget to answer your question. Or just visit our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where we don't care where you live, but where you will find the answers to all of those garden questions you were going to ask us in the Garden Answers A to Z section, as well as audio of this show, past shows, and our podcast. Elizabeth Perez Lunes, executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our engineer is Al Banks. Our social media director is Amanda McGrath. Check out her fine work at the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. Rich Banowitz and Lauren Elkins keep our website pest-free. Always a lady, Alexis Landis produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. Not at all ladylike is our editor, Al Banks. Aphid-eating Stephen Drehobel is our ace production assistant. I'm slightly infested Mike McGrath, so I think I should throw myself into a room full of ladybugs to try and get cleaned up before I see you again next week. What do you do when it takes a year for your compost to be finally finished? I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden, we'll explain how to use your black gold out of season, plus new plants under attack by the emerald ash borer, and your fabulous phone calls.